Well, welcome back. All that talk of coffee, I had to have coffee. It was delicious. So,
welcome back.
Yay.
We're still talking about virtual machines, so we'll continue there. Or let me quickly start the presentation. Sorry. Let me open up the presentation. We're in module two. We're talking about more stuff with virtual machines, of course. And in this module, we'll cover endpoints in more details. That is, we showed already. We could RDP into the session, into a virtual machine, because the endpoints are defined, mm-hmm. and we'll create additional endpoints ourselves. And then we'll also address a topic that was mentioned as well in the previous session, and that was about how to make sure that two virtual machines are not on the same rack, so you can have them on different racks. We still have to make the second virtual machine, so we'll start with that one, and then we can delete them again after that.
Perfect.
Just to recap what we saw, what we have created so far and what we continue now, we've created a single virtual machine, did not spend a lot of time on some of the parameters for configuration, but certainly what was important to see that there is a cloudapp.net name defined. Let's call that the DNS name. Very different from the host name. The host name was webserver1. The DNS name was coffeeboston.cloudnap.
Which makes sense, because they're different kind of objects, because one is the container and the other is the thing in it. So I guess that makes sense.
Indeed. And we also saw two IP addresses. One public IP address, which is actually what resolves from cloudapp.net.
Okay.
And the internal IP address. Well, it was actually not .4, it was .7 what we did.
Yeah.
And the virtual machines were connected to the internet. Now we're going to add a second virtual machine and see how that works. So the cloud service that we now saw is basically a grouping of virtual machines with a single public IP address. And I can tell you the next line as well, because then you know everything there is to know about cloud services. It has these stop, start, and delete operations. So basically, that's a good way of thinking of it now, a grouping of virtual machines. and the public name will actually stay with us now for as long as we have this cloud service.
So it just keeps, so no matter how many VMs you add to the cloud service still has that same DNS name always.
Yes, and the reverse is also true. If I now delete all my virtual machines, I will still have the coffeeboston.cloudapp.net.
Oh, so you still have that container, and you could maybe use that again.
I'll use it for all my examples from now on.
So you own this now. This is
yours. Exactly.
All right. Well, you know, congratulations on your new business. It's fabulous stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's good until 2150.
Great.
Let's means the year 2150, not
2150.
Not the
it doesn't expire tonight.
Okay, so let's go back to the demonstration, because now I want to create a second virtual machine. So go out of PowerPoint, go back to the portal.
Okay.
Yes, I'm in the portal here. This is a web server one, but now we're going to create a second virtual machine, of course. they're all happy running. Let's just to make sure that we see what the size is of this one. Just want to make sure.
Is this the one we changed around?
Yes, because look, it's a medium.
It's a medium two core.
So it's a little
bit
larger. So that's correct.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go to the wizard again, and I click on new. I click on virtual machine, and I'll go again to from gallery. I will take the same colorful Windows version here.
I love that. That's the version. I think we should call it that.
Let me point out one thing, that just so not to confuse anybody, my images is still empty, of course, right? I did not create an image. This was not creating an image.
Okay.
I just created a virtual machine.
Okay, so even though you took it from the ISO and you've got it running,
right,
that's not the same thing as creating an image.
Correct, that's a separate step. If I like this virtual machine a lot and I configure it with all kinds
colorful
of things.
I mean, you've got to like it.
That's one thing already. But if I install applications that I like, etc., I can make it into an image. So an existing virtual machine can become an image.
Okay.
But I didn't do that yet. So that was not
what
was shown here.
Cool.
So let's go back to
I'm glad you explained that, because I kind of thought that's what that
yes,
was.
Yes. No, we'll do that. Take the colorful one. Next. I give it a name. Very original. I know what this is going to be. Web
server
2.
Oh my gosh! I was going to guess. I was going to be like, I think it's going to be Web Server 2.
You knew that, huh?
I did.
It's still not a common name, so I can still use that. I mean, that I can continue to use it, of course. It's not one of the names that hackers might use.
It's an uncommon name.
And I'll give it a password again. So here, nothing changed compared to what we did earlier, you could say.
Okay.
But now the next, the third tab here.
I like how it already yells at you, like this big red thing. Hello.
Yeah, that because the name is already by somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, we know we don't want to use Web Server 2. We know that we want to have this communicating with the other virtual machine. So a very good suggestion would be to type Coffee Boston. Very good, but that's not how it works.
That's not how. Oh, so you don't actually type the name of the thing you want it
correct.
To join.
Correct. So I'm not creating a new cloud service
with
this name.
Oh, right. I see. Okay.
So it's almost there.
So instead, it still yells at you.
Okay. Instead, I just Coffee Boston.
I select
an existing one.
So you could have like tons of cloud services out there. I see you do. And
yes.
You have to select which one you want this to kind of be part of or join or
yes.
be contained in, I guess. Yeah.
And thinking of it, a container of a grouping is in it good. So I add it to the container. And it also means that the second virtual machine has some parameters that I cannot change because it gets it from...
Oh, because it's getting from the container, of course.
Yes,
okay.
Indeed.
Right.
For example, we haven't looked at networking yet, but now this is grayed out because it says, hey, you now get your networking from the existing cloud service.
So I'm going to ask like a silly question here. When you go ahead and you create this virtual machine,
mm-hmm.
can you like create another separate whole different cloud service for it to live in, or do you have to select something that you've already created? Like, well, you know.
No, you can. That's a good question.
Because it's the second one, so
yes,
I don't know, right?
No, you can create a second and third and cloud service.
Okay.
And then those cloud services could even communicate with each other.
Oh, is that how you got so many cloud services? Because
yeah,
every
exactly.
time you create a VM and you don't add it to a cloud service, then you're creating a new cloud service.
Yeah, so I think the best summary of a cloud service is what was on the slide. It's a grouping with a single public IP address.
Okay,
so
if you
don't
want them
like
to be
that,
together, then, you know...
If you want a second public IP address, then you do a second cloud service.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, right.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's not focus on the storage account just yet. Availability set we get later as well. And I go to the next space. This already looks slightly different because now suddenly the remote desktop was auto. We explained that. It was for security reasons.
If I wanted to change it to something else completely different, I mean... I don't know, whatever public port I feel like using. Can I change it myself, or are my choices auto and
like
then
if you happen to like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Yeah, like it's my favorite.
Yeah, you can do that.
Okay.
That's perfectly fine.
Right.
I don't. But
don't. Okay, I won't. I was just wondering if it like lets me.
No, you can do
things.
That.
Okay.
The number that you cannot type is the number auto, because then it says you must be mistaken. Auto is not valid. So
so only it can tell you auto. That's pretty
exactly.
bossy.
So
okay, fine.
The way it works is you leave it empty, and then it says, oh, you mean auto? And then it works.
Of course I did. It was
just
polite,
a small
right, yeah.
tidbit there, so
okay,
you know.
Okay, got it, yeah.
The other question is, why is PowerShell now suddenly auto? Remember, before it was port 5986. We didn't worry about security at the time. Why is it now auto? Probably if I type 1986, you will understand. Because we already have in this cloud service this particular port being forwarded to Web Server 1.
So it's going to the cloud service, and then it's got to go in through the cloud service to the VM. And if I give it that same port, it won't know where it's going. It won't know which VM.
And you cannot have one port pointing to two different ones.
Oh, right, of course.
So remember, this is the public port.
Yeah, no. Okay, I see.
And the public port is on the cloud service. The private port is on the virtual machine. And can be again 3389 and again 5986.
Because that's all like protected
separate virtual
inside.
Machine.
Okay.
But this is public, so we'll make this auto as well.
Again, blank is auto.
But it's interesting to see that it now changed.
Yeah.
I'm not adding an endpoint now. We'll do that later.
Okay.
Let's create a second virtual machine. It will be similar. Here's the second virtual machine being created now. And here in the DNS name, which is actually the cloud service list, you can see that it's also part of Coffee Boston. And so we already know from this second one that it will have the same public IP address,
and then we
course.
Know pretty much its DNS name too, because it's going to be going through that.
Yes, right, indeed. So this is the second one that's being started up. It's two web servers.
Uh-huh.
And what I want to do, I'll switch back to the presentation to set us up. What I want to do is now make sure that we can connect through the web connection on port 80.
Oh, right.
And I now want to make sure that those two web servers can do failover between each other, so load balancing.
Oh, because just because it can ping the cloud service and the cloud service there, you still have to set up your virtual machines to do the thing you want them to do.
Correct. And okay. Let's go to the other one I created earlier. If you look at the endpoints, currently the only thing it does from the internet is allowing RDP connections and allowing a PowerShell connection.
Oh, because you can control them via PowerShell, of course, so you can do that.
That's why those two are there.
Okay, got it.
But this is a web server, so I probably know, actually I might do it now already, I know that I want to add another endpoint to it and allow web port 80 to come in here as well.
Okay.
So let me quickly, before going too fast, let me switch back to the presentation. So okay. we'll do it one at a time. So now I have the second virtual machine is created, and the second virtual machine will be have a similar IP address as the first virtual machine, and they can communicate with each other. And this is how it looks full screen, exactly the same. So let's indeed focus more on endpoints. This is the connections from the internet, inbound, not outbound. Outbound, everything is possible.
Right.
Inbound connections. It start out default by two.
Wait, outbound's everything possible? Like I can sit on, I can like connect to a VM and like surf?
Yes, indeed.
Wow, okay.
So the virtual machine has no
just checking.
Outbound.
I mean, like, it's everything is possible. I don't know.
Yes, yes.
And it's probably not good because I'm paying for the traffic out, but, you know.
It's not so costly. You can easily surf. No worries there.
Not that I'm trying to.
But for the inbound, we have to create the endpoints.
Okay.
And this is inbound from the real internet. This is not inbound from, let's say, a corporate location where I think you're going to talk about creating a VPN connection or something.
So this is just like you're just going and hitting a web page or something, kind of, except for you're doing it, you know, differently because you're trying to get to RDP.
Correct, and that's why port 80 would be a normal example for HTTP here. You can do TCP and UDP. That means you cannot do ping, for example, right? Because that is ICMP.
Oh, it's ICMP,
different protocol.
We don't let, of
course. So we cannot do that.
So all these people, like, if you try to like ping, they're not going to get a response. You'll get like maybe name resolution, and that's about it. Like what we did earlier with the cloud service.
The name resolution would work, but you won't get there with
so it's
ICMP.
Not a really good way to tell if your server's up and running is sitting there pinging it because it's just not going to say anything.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Hold that thought, because if we do load balancing, we also need to have a way of understanding if the virtual machine is available, and pinging apparently does not work.
Yeah.
So we have a way of probing that the virtual machine is available. We'll see that as well.
Cool.
So we'll look at load balancing as well. how does load balancing work? That means that a single port, we'll take port 80 as an example, will now not only lead traffic to one virtual machine, but it will lead traffic to two or more virtual machines within the same cloud service. As you can see here on the graphic here, here are three virtual machines in the same cloud service. These are the private ports, I almost said it wrong, in the virtual machine. And this port 80 on the outside is the public port, which is on the outside, and that's the port on the cloud service.
Gotcha.
So when we do load balancing, any web request will go to any of those virtual machines, so it will actually be spread out.
Oh, so it's not just hitting one of them and just like, you're the one I'm hitting on them. It's all of them.
No, it's hitting one of them.
It's hitting one of them?
But the next request might go to the other one.
So it's
really
so it's based on
balancing the load.
Okay, got it. Okay.
Yes. And if you're going between those different virtual machines, that's nice for performance because you have more virtual machines that can handle the traffic.
Right.
But you get another benefit right away as well, even though it's called load balancing, and that's fault tolerance, meaning that if you have multiple virtual machines, let's say three, in the demo I will use two, if one of those virtual machines is not available, then it will only go to the one that is available.
Oh, so you're not constantly hitting something that's giving you like some kind of error or something like, hey, we can't reach this or whatever.
Indeed.
It's one of the other two is going to just handle that. So, okay, I like that.
So you could say that people like load balance endpoints, perhaps even more for the fault tolerance aspect of it than for the performance aspect. If your virtual machine can handle the performance,
right, yeah,
then the fault tolerance is still very important.
Because they're web servers, I mean,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, exactly,
right.
they can handle that. Okay, let's do that. I'll switch back to the demo. I'll click here, okay, and go to the portal.
Okay.
Let's not start in the middle of a wizard. Here's the virtual machines. This one is still running, so just provisioning, so that's almost done. Let's go to Web Server 1 and Web Server 2. They're both in Coffee Boston. And I'm now going to add an endpoint. And this is the two endpoints that I have now. If I click Add, I can add an endpoint to it. And I'll have to give it a name. Oh, sorry, we're not there yet. I click on Next.
Okay.
I have to give it a name. And here's a list of suggested names.
So these are standalone endpoints.
This is a standalone endpoint, yes. But pretty soon I will check mark here, and then it will be a load balance. So
okay.
I will create
it. I saw the wizard had this like thing to choose.
Good point.
And it was like,
you can select between standalone or an existing load balance.
But because we don't have an existing load balance set,
this
then we can't just add to it. Okay.
Empty, yes.
Okay, so I need to create one.
Add a standalone endpoint or create a load balanced endpoint. That will do.
Got it.
So here's a list of selected names. Very friendly. But you can actually pick your own name as well. And I happen to like the name Web. So forget about the list of selected names.
See, you just went off. You kind of went off road there. You changed the naming structure.
Completely. I call it Web.
Okay.
Instead of HTTP. But I like Web better.
Got it.
Protocol is TCP or UDP.
Okay.
The public port, of course, you can make it the same. So the cloud service can have port 80 and the private port can have port 80 as well. Then
okay.
On the outside is on the cloud service is port 80. Just so that you can see, you can change it.
I
intentionally make
okay.
it 8080 on the outside.
Okay.
Let's do that. 8080 on the outside. Okay, and now, of course, I'll create a load balance set.
Okay.
So that would mean that this particular public port, 8080, will then send the traffic to more than one virtual machine, we hope. Okay.
We hope.
So I go to the next
one.
Sure. And now I have to configure the load balance set that I'm creating. I have to give the load balance set also a name, so I recognize it later.
Okay.
I will use my naming strategy of calling it Web.
Is it so that you can add then, like you know that, oh, if I have another web server, I want to add it to the load balance set. Is that the thing that you
yes.
could? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So maybe Web 80 would be a good one name as well, so you can distinguish it from
Which
something else.
Which from another one? Yeah, whatever you're
web
doing.
For now.
Sure, yeah.
Then this is what I mentioned earlier, the probe. Here you can specify how you want to test if all the virtual machines in the set are up and running. So you can either use an HTTP request,
okay.
then it just goes to a particular URL in the virtual machine, and then it has to get an answer back.
Okay.
Actually, you're testing now if IIS is available as well. So this is actually a really
oh,
good
it's
test.
Oh, double doing it.
Because,
okay.
Because otherwise, HTTP would not respond.
Right.
I'll keep it more simple and I'll just test on TCP port 80.
Which is just testing are you alive, right?
Testing if the port is okay. there. And how often should it do that? Well, let's do 4 seconds. That's a little bit too much.
Wow. Oh,
but I can do it every 5
seconds. They've decided that's too
that's
much.
The minimum.
4 seconds and 5 seconds. Yeah, okay, got it. So 5 seconds.
And the number of probes is the number of times it might miss it. So if it now misses it twice, then it will no longer send traffic there. So that means in this case, if I calculate it correctly, that it will be a maximum of 14 seconds, and then it will understand like 2 times 5.
And then it would go.
Or 3 times 5 min 1 second, something like
something
that.
Something like that. So, but it does actually still keep sending these probes, and then and it knows when it's back alive
knows when
again,
it's back,
and just
and then
adds
it, goes
it back
there.
In.
Yes.
And says, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's create this. So now what it's doing, it's creating a new endpoint, as you can see here. The load balance set name is there as well. Web, I call both Web.
Okay.
And this is from 8080 going to 80. I'm sure this will finish at some point.
Okay.
But what I did on the other two web servers that I created already, I have done exactly the same. So if you look here,
so we can see
you
what the
see
result
that
is
it's
do.
Already port 8080 and it's already done on the other two.
Okay.
if you didn't have that, then what you would do is, I now did it on web server 1.
Okay.
I would have to go to web server 2. And on web server 2, I look at the endpoints. And I add also another endpoint. And now I would not do standalone, but select the existing. Well, there's only one, so I can only do that
one.
Select web, and then I use that one.
Okay.
But I don't want to wait for it. I did it already on the earlier two. So those two have a shared low balance web endpoint.
Okay, and then they just constantly... Now, when they do the probe for it, is it hit both web servers exactly the same way? Like, is it... Will it check one file on one and one file on the other, or do they match because they have to have the same file it's looking for? Remember, because you said that it looks for the same thing?
Well, now I set it up to connect to a port 80, so it will only go to port 80.
But what if you didn't? What if you set it up to go to a
to the URL, then the same URL, probably the home page or something, or like a page
then
that's really small.
Then it has to find the both on the same. So you're setting it up in one spot, and then it has to find it because it's just one.
On both of them, yes.
Okay.
Or however many you have.
Because it's a set. Got it. All right. Okay. So if I forget to do that, then I forget. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to the thing.
Then it just says it's offline.
Then I've just taken the time to create something that's offline. Fabulous.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
Let's see if this actually works. What I've done is in those virtual machines, this is WebVM2. I went to the INET pub page. IIS is installed inside the virtual machine. And I changed the home page, the IIS start file. You're not supposed to change the file. But what I've done, I've added
a
text here.
Yeah,
yeah, connecting to number 2.
I see, okay.
So if I connect to the local machine now, you see this welcome IIS7.
Mm-hmm.
But it also tells me very clearly that the local host, of course, is connected to machine 2. So what we now can do, if you remember how we set it up, the cloud service is coffeeparis.cloudapp.net. Is Coffee Paris, right?
Okay,
because
we're
doing those too.
We're
not
Paris,
in Boston.
We've jetted out.
Because Boston was still building. We do it on Coffee Paris. So if I now open up a new web page and I go to.
Oh, look, it's moving the cat.
Oh, yes.
That's
yes.
a cool one.
Distracted right away.
I know, right?
End of the demo.
Sparkles.
So if I now go to coffeeparis. Coffeeparis.cloudapp. I'm on the now on my notebook, by the way. I'm not there somewhere else. Cloud, what did I do? Cloudapp.
Cloudapp.net.
8080. Remember, that's how we set it up.
Oh, that's right, because we did
so Coffeeparis, Cloudapp.net, 8080. If I now hit enter, I get this page, and apparently I'm connecting now to machine number 2.
Okay.
If I refresh.
It might cache it, obviously, for this, but if you were to
if
do
I
it.
Refresh a few times.
Really likes 8088 on that.
If I look really angry and then close it down again and try it again.
It just really likes that one. I think it's caching the information
it's going
nicely.
Really interestingly to 2. Well, maybe if I try, I'll try one more thing and try to do it from a different one.
It's just
there we go.
One. So all right, yay.
So it is definitely balancing the load, although
it's very much,
from a single
such
machine
randomly.
You don't see that happening.
So
of course,
it's not like round robin-y balancing, or maybe everyone is going to this trying to hit this, and then you just happen to hit it.
That's possible, but for web pages, it might also go to the same one. So
true. Okay.
So now you see a load balanced between the two. And also for fault tolerance, so if we now to shut down one of those, then it would still be going to the remaining one, to 1 and 2. so to recap, this was done on these 2.
Okay.
Now I did it on web server 2. I did part of it already. I created the endpoint, but I didn't set it up for endpoint for the other web server, so that's the other thing I should have
done. And it can just add in, and you can do that any time, so you don't.
Yes.
And can you remove them and just, like, swap them around or whatever? Like, if you just say, "Hey, this server I don't like anymore, I'm putting a new one in."
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you can also still configure it if I just select the endpoint, and I used to click Add to add a new one,
right.
But if I click Edit, then I can actually reconfigure it and just change some of the things that, that were here. Like, for example, like you said, go to an HTTP location instead to probe the homepage or something like that. Oh, sorry. To do it like this.
Oh, but the, that's the thing that was interesting to me, is that the probe path, like, what if you forget to do it on both servers and then...
You would probably do a test like I just did and then don't see the response, so that would be good to quickly test it.
That would be true, too. Okay, yeah.
Yes. I'm not going to change it, by the way.
No, I was just, you know, asking.
So in this story, we overlooked one thing, and if we really are interested in fault tolerance... then we also want to make sure that those two or more web servers are not on the exact same single point of failure, exact same rack.
Oh, right, because you're talking about the physical location of things. So you want to make sure they're kind of separate. I mean, close, but separate, right?
Exactly. So we want to make sure that they're, close but separate would be a very good description. That are not on the same rack. If one router is being replaced, for example, or replaced by a faster one or something like that, and it's currently not available, then I don't want it to affect multiple machines in the same set.
And this is all that seamless stuff that we don't even like think about that's going on in the background, which is kind of cool about the whole IaaS thing. Somebody is doing something, and it's not us.
Well,
it's
you don't think about it because somebody else does it.
Well, yeah, it's a human being doing this, obviously, but it's not like me at midnight in the server room,
correct,
which is great. Yeah.
But I still want to indicate that those two should not be on the same rack.
Oh, right.
So
you
I still have to indicate that.
So you have control over where it's going to be in the physical network or physical data center.
Yes.
But you don't have to actually get up and plug the plug,
indeed.
Which is... like what I'm all about, yeah.
Yeah, and so that kind of change. The name of that feature is not, although I liked what you said, close but not too close, or what you say, near but not too close.
Yeah, something like that.
That's not the name of this feature. It has a more serious name.
I'm sure. We should just name it
close but not too close.
Yeah.
It's called availability set. So what I can do is for those two virtual machines, let's do it for these two. Oh, sorry. No, you know what? Let's do it for these two web servers. I can show it here.
Okay.
So what I have to configure on these web servers is change that they are in the same availability set. So that's that maybe backwards as you might imagine it. If they're in the same availability set, that means they should not be both on the same unit that can fail.
So here is my silly question. You've got them in data centers, and you choose what region or what data center you're putting them in.
Yes.
So you can't really choose something like in, you know, U.S. Central or somewhere and Europe, right? They have to actually be in the same physical?
For endpoint, yes,
okay.
Because the cloud surface is the one thing that
keeps
is
them
in
unified.
There.
Yes. Okay, cool.
So for this, this type of load balancing I have to do in the same in the same data center.
Yes. I just wanted to understand that.
So currently they're not in the same availability set. I don't even have an availability set.
Okay.
So they could be, by coincidence, on the same rack that could fail.
But it would be coincidence, of course.
Indeed. And I want to be sure about this.
Right.
The more official word for rack that can fail is a fault domain. And if I look at the
cloud surface... I didn't even
know you
had an official name. Fault domain it is. Okay.
So there's also an official name for close but not too close. And there's also an official name for this.
Okay.
If I go to Café Boston, right?
We were in Paris for a while, but I think we moved to Boston.
Boston.
Now. Yeah.
We can do Boston now. If I... by the way, I clicked while I was talking to it. If I look at my cloud services, Café Boston... and look at the Café Boston configuration. Here's a list of instances. And here in the instances, web server 1, web server 2, I can see that the identification of the fault domain is the same, 00.
Oh, that's not okay.
And if it's like 2.3 or 1.4, then it's different fault domains.
Okay.
So that doesn't mean they're in the same rack. It just means they have no rules that they cannot be in the same rack.
Oh, okay.
So they might be in different racks.
That's different than what I would think. I would think they match up, so okay. But, yeah.
Well, no, and even if they're currently in the same rack, If they're currently in different racks, mm-hmm. if we don't indicate that they can never be together...
Oh, they could just move there.
They could move, right?
If
maybe the Hyper-V gets updated, or there's another reason that they get moved, or maybe I'm changing the size, remember, from small to larger.
And it might have moved to a different location.
It might move.
Right.
And so it's important, it's almost not important what the current situation is, but that we specify that they should never be on the same.
Okay, so like if you didn't do anything, it's fine, but if you wanted
might
to be...
wind up
but
together.
If you wanted to be like... super, okay, I want it to be this way, you've got to specify, can specify.
And if you use words like fault tolerance, you want to specify
it,
of course.
So
let's go to the virtual machine, web server 1, and I go to configure web server 1, and I create a new availability set, mm-hmm. which is really a boring concept because I just give it a name.
I cannot guess what this name is going to be. This is...
close,
but not too close. Let's see if it takes a long name. Does it?
Ah.
Oh, it didn't. Maybe just close, but not. There.
Not too close.
There you go.
Okay.
Oh, I like that one.
You can have more serious names as well. But now I have this, I'll save it. So now this virtual machine will be moved in this availability set. It doesn't move anywhere really, but now it's just in that availability set. And what I now also will do, if I go to the other web server, web server 2, I go to here, configure, and I guess I have to wait until web server 1 is done with that.
Right, okay.
But then they would be, when it's
Will it actually move it? Like if it's... where it's not, you've told it it's part of this availability set. And say, by some coincidence, they're like, you know, best friends sitting next
to
each other.
They happen to be on the same. They're using the same networking. That means they're using the same affinity group. We didn't talk about that yet.
Right.
So very likely that they're on this, that they are on the same rack or on the same fault domain.
Okay.
And this one will probably not move yet, because the first one, by definition, is safe.
Gotcha.
But then if I do the second one in the same availability group as well, availability set, sorry, then it might restart. This one seems to be only updating.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure if it's done already, if I can change this one to there as well. Yeah, it's there. So now I move this one to not too close as well.
Okay.
This is web server 2.
Oh, and it's showing web server 1's
web server 1 is already in this set.
That's convenient.
So this means those two should not be too close.
Okay.
So let's do this as well. Yes. And this one, if they were in the same fault domain at the moment, they might actually... Yeah. Oh, it is starting. So it might
move
somewhere else.
So it was like, you've got to move.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. Okay.
And, well,
so that's actually something important to note then.
That
if you start doing this stuff, you could restart your VM and it won't be available while it's being restarted. So, but
correct.
The other one's up and running, so you've already got this load balance set, right? So it's going to probe, it's going to find out this guy's not available, it's still going to send it to the other guy?
Well, if you had said that 2 minutes earlier, I would have said, yes, that's a good plan, let's not do them at the same time.
Gotcha.
But I forgot about that, so now I do them both at the same time, so that was actually not so smart. But but your reasoning is totally correct.
Okay.
And the IP addresses, again, don't change, right?
It's all still stuck with it. Okay,
yes.
That's perfect.
So I'm sure they are doing that well. If I now look at it, does it already it tells me actually those are in the availability set. And the other way of checking it, what I indicated, if I go to the cloud servers and go to Config Boston and look at the instances in the cloud servers, I can actually see that they are in, you can see those numbers are different.
Right.
Therefore, they're not in the same fault domain.
That's very cool. I had no idea what that was. That's cool.
They also talk about update domain. That is a similar concept. An update domain means, and the numbers are different, so they're not in the same update domain. What that means is that if... there is a Hyper-V patch or something on the host.
Oh, it's truly updates.
That Microsoft will do an update.
Okay.
They will update Hyper-V and they will move the virtual machine somewhere else and restart Hyper-V.
I see.
But if they're in different update domains, then Microsoft or Azure...
It won't be happening at the same time.
...will make sure that they don't do it at the same time.
Very cool.
And that is actually really good because that means that our load balance endpoints...
Will
can
still
survive
work.
That
oh,
very
right.
nicely.
Okay, so there's a whole lot
domain.
Of reason
yes.
to have like these plans in place. So it's not just like firing all this stuff up. I mean, if you want it actually available, all the time or whatever.
Yes, yeah. you do.
You have to go through these steps to make sure it is, but they're available to you to make them available.
Well, and I still echo what you said earlier that you don't have to worry about it because that's all done by the Azure infrastructure, not by you in the data center.
Right, yeah.
But you have to indicate, configure how you want it to be, that you don't want them to be separate from each other.
You might not. Yeah, you might want to create some pretty creative situations there. I mean, only you know what's running on your web servers. You're not going to be like,
Yeah, so example is more complicated, let's say you have also two SQL servers that are serviced by, or the web servers are connecting to the SQL server, then you might have a situation where the two web servers are in a separate availability set, and the two SQL servers are in another availability set. So then you're certain that there's always one web server, at least, and one SQL server available.
So you get quite creative with this.
Yes, exactly,
And you should get quite creative if you want it to be there all the time.
If you want to
do that. If you're not just testing or whatever, but yeah.
I think they are done updating. Yeah, so that all works. Let's switch back to the presentation to summarize what we have been doing.
Okay.
And I'll make it full screen.
Okay.
So in the graphic, you see three virtual machines. We did it with two, of course, the load balancing, and we did it with port 8080.
Mm-hmm.
Then we already talked about several of the groupings here. The cloud, well, not all of them. The cloud servers we showed, that was the public IP and the start-stop operations you can do.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about affinity groups yet. We'll get to that when we do networking, I assume.
Yeah, and we will talk about virtual network later because...
Virtual networks similarly, yeah.
Yeah, because when you go through and you start creating your VMs, you have to kind of think about that. So we kind of went right past it. So yeah, we'll get it later.
We did talk about fault domains. Yes. I'm summarizing it here as a physical rec, but more precisely, it is a single unit that can fail by itself.
Okay.
And then that's a fault domain. And we did talk about update domains, and we used availability sets to indicate that it should not be in the same fault domain and update domain. I put it intentionally on a separate slide, but because this is 6 concepts that are related to grouping the virtual machines somehow, and I thought it was important to see the difference there.
Yeah, because they all do have different implications, don't they?
Yes.
And you can do them independently or together or whatever you want to do, right? So.
And this is even before starting to talk about virtual networks, which you will do later. So there. Here's the other example, the availability set, the not too close functionality.
Gotcha.
And in the example below, you see two web servers in the blue availability set, and then two SQL servers in the green availability set. And then you don't know if those would be on just two racks, could be four different racks.
Right.
But at least you know that the two SQL servers will not be failing at the same time because of a hardware failure in Azure. And the two virtual machines with web server will not be failing at the same time because of the same event happening in the Azure data center.
And then that's separate from configuring the load balancing endpoints for the virtual machines themselves.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, indeed. That is from there. Affinity group is almost the opposite. That means that you want to have them next to each other.
Okay.
We kind of skipped over the affinity group.
I'll hit it with the networking stuff.
Yes. Okay, let's do the last part here, and that's about stopping, starting, delegating.
Yeah, this stuff is really interesting to me, this stop, start, deallocate, because I find it a little confusing, frankly.
Yes. Well, to make it more understandable, I came up with an abbreviation, SSDD. That's not an official abbreviation, by the way. I'm just making it up. You can search on the internet what SSDD stands for. It stands for single site double density.
Does it really?
That's one of the abbreviations.
Okay.
And then there's a few others.
Well, this is going to just be like, all the kids are going to be talking about this.
About SSDD. Yeah. But in this case, it means start, stop, deallocate, delete.
Gotcha.
Because those are four operations you can do on a virtual machine. We didn't do any of them yet because they happened automatically when we created it.
But we sort of saw a few status looking things there. These are? Okay.
So let's switch to the to the demo again.
Okay.
Close here, go to the demo.
I want to see what the deallocate thing kind of is weird to me. So I don't understand that one, and I would love if you could explain that one.
Yes. Well, I can tell you what deallocate is not.
Okay.
If it's running like here,
then
that's clearly running well. And then you can delete a virtual machine, and then it's gone completely. I'm not going to do that yet.
Okay.
And then here you see indeed what you point out, stopped and stopped deallocate.
Yeah, that's like, what does that mean?
Well, first of all, it's new. So new in Windows Azure. So if you look at a resource or maybe an article or a blog article that's like a year old, you won't see this here. So it's important to point out that that this is something new.
Okay.
What is this related to is with how much resources you use in the Windows Azure data center. Why would you care? Because you pay for the resources that you use.
Oh, so that little cost button that I had at the top of my my portal when I was showing it, because I'm using the free trial,
it's
ticking.
Yes, it indicates what you're doing. So so every hour that this virtual machine is running, it costs so many cents, however many it is.
I don't know, but
And that adds up. And if you delete a virtual machine, it will be no surprise that you don't do that.
Because it's the pay-as-you-go thing. Got it. Okay,
yeah, exactly.
That makes sense.
If I look at settings all the way at the bottom, by the way, here's settings. And then there's an interesting, it's settings, so I'm not changing any of the settings, but it happens to be at settings. If you go to usage, then here I can see what I'm currently using and what I'm currently, well, it's interesting to know how much you're using. So I'm paying for 8 cores at this moment.
Okay.
And I have 13 cloud services at this moment.
Wow, look at you.
And
13.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I have 5 storage accounts. We haven't talked about storage accounts yet.
Are your 13 cloud services all related to coffee or no?
Pretty much. And
pretty
don't
much?
Forget, I have multiple subscriptions here as well. So I have a very large coffee
you have a conglomeration.
Thing happening here. Yeah. This is just a single subscription happening.
Okay.
I also want to point out that these have maximums. So by default, like you did, if you create a trial account, you will have a maximum of 20 cores, 20 cloud services, and 20 storage accounts.
I never noticed that. Okay, so I'm kind of, I see what it is.
And
right.
20 cores means you can start 20 small virtual machines, or maybe 3 larger ones.
And that's where that comes into play with changing the sizes around a little bit if I'm just trying to play and budget and, you know, do that,
Well, but if...
I mean, because I have a free trial. So,
if the coffee business go so well that you want to have more cores running.
Well, if I find it for real,
Then, well, after the 30 days.
Yeah, after 30 days, right.
Then you should just call support Azure and they will raise the number of cores and cloud services.
And magic, I've got what I need. I like this.
Yeah, so then you can do that. And this is the usage. So what a good suggestion would be, but it's incorrect, what a good suggestion would be, if you go to a particular virtual machine, let's say this one, web server.
It's incorrect. Okay, tell me
it's
what's
incorrect, but it's a good thought. And what many people will think, if I'm here in a web server and I'm in the virtual machine now, and I do shut down, then the virtual machine will shut down.
I would
correct.
Think it, yeah, I would think it
that's
would
not
shut
the
down.
Incorrect part yet.
All right, but I mean, you can do that to a virtual
you can
machine,
do that.
Right? That's okay.
You can
All
do
right.
that. And then it comes in a stopped state. So this is not surprising yet. Except,
no, I mean, I would think that would be,
it's still the stopped virtual machine. Look at it. It's still at a, it has an IP address, of course.
Well, of course, it's a virtual machine. Of course it does.
If I were to look at the full domain, I could see that where it's allocated.
Okay.
So I'm still taking up resources. Or in other words, that
blade. Oh, I'm taking up that rack space? Or
indeed, it's still
I've got
there.
And I've got the information. So I'm kind of think I'm putting it on hold, but you make it sound like I'm not kind of putting it on
correct.
Hold. Correct.
Okay. And the usage will also not change. So the price for the cost for a running virtual machine or the price for a stopped virtual machine is exactly the same because you're still using space.
Because you're not talking traffic here. You're talking actually running,
having
taking
that
up that
machine.
Space.
Yes.
Okay.
Having it take up that space.
Okay.
So now you also know what the alternative is that it's deallocating it. And if you do that, if it's deallocated, that would mean it would no longer take up any space in the blade, and then it would no longer count against your usage.
So what's it look like then?
If you look at the configuration of
this
one?
Yeah, I want to see what that looks like.
Yeah, well, that's a good one. For example, this virtual machine, IIS VM1, is deallocated. What does it say? Deallocated, right?
Deallocated, yeah.
It is in this particular cloud service, so it's still in that cloud service.
Okay, and the cloud service is just the container, so
the container is still there. Okay. That doesn't take up any resources. That's more like an administrative unit, let's say.
Okay.
But it doesn't know the host name, and it doesn't have an IP address, and so the virtual machine is just, and it does take up. It takes up zero cores, right? It's not,
I see.
Not
so it's
using
not
up
using
anything.
I see. Yeah.
I can start it up again. It's
you
not
can?
Deleted. If I select this one.
Is all my stuff still on it? Like if I configure.
Everything is still there.
Okay.
It just means that, well, it probably means more. But let's summarize it as the VHD file is just moved away from that physical location.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Now, how did I get a machine in deallocated?
I don't know, because I don't see like how you do it. So.
Correct. How you do it is the following. You have a particular virtual machine, and if you click shut down here...
You're going to tell me it's not going to just shut down my virtual machine like
that?
Yeah,
this button
not?
Is actually wrong. It says shut down. It should actually say super shutdown of deallocate.
I like it. See, like super, it's like it has a cape again. Okay, so
if I click this one, then it would actually first shut it down.
Okay.
Stopped and then immediately deallocated as well.
That's kind of. So, I mean, at least does it tell you? Does that like message tell you it's doing that? I didn't see, but I mean.
Well, yeah, the message should tell it. Now it says shut down. That's.
Oh, that one because it's.
Yeah,
just
no,
stopped.
That's.
Yeah, but on the running one, does it say something different?
Yeah, actually, maybe because this one is running, I'm confusing
right,
it a little bit.
Oh, right, I got
bit.
It. Okay, yeah.
Because
yeah.
Here, now
there
the message
we go.
Is correct.
Okay, that's what I was thought
it says,
I saw,
if
yeah.
you continue, the IP address will be released. Are you sure you want to? Deallocate for it says shutdown.
So when it's talking about IP address released, it's talking about that internal IP address.
Only the internal IP address.
Because it's still part of a cloud service.
Yes.
Because you haven't killed
yes.
the cloud service yet. It's like it's still going. You're just taking it out of that container.
Yes.
Pretty
yes.
Much. Or
indeed.
Taking the IP address off of it anyway.
So yeah, I'm just
it's
starting
still in the
at that one.
Container, yeah.
Yes, yes, indeed. So this is a good one to remember that shutting down inside the virtual machine, then it gets to stopped.
Okay.
And shutting down with this button actually deallocates the
so
virtual machine.
So one you're still paying for if it's stopped. And if you see deallocated, then you're not paying for that, but you also got rid of the IP address should you have loved it.
Well, but you also you can start it up fairly
you can, oh,
quickly.
You can start it back up again. Okay.
So what I do is I have a bunch of virtual machines in Azure, and then when I'm not using them for a while, I just all deallocate them, and then they come back up. And if the virtual networking is configured correctly, but you will explain that, then they get IP addresses that I like. So then they're up and I don't pay for anything while they're not being used.
So if I deallocate it, I'm not saying remove all of my applications and go back to that original image that I used day one. I'm saying all the stuff that I put on that VM is still there.
Yes,
okay.
including all the configuration, extra data disks, all is there.
Okay, cool.
So I think we are at the end of this session. So
well, we should probably take a break then.
Let's wrap this up and we'll take a 10 minutes break and we'll be back in after the break. Thank you.
Perfect.